Hello out there. This is Pamela Fagan Hutchins, and you have found me and today's guest at Wine Women in Writing. This is a show where I talk with other writers about their characterization, their great stories. I tend to like to focus on the female characters and the female authors, but I like guys too. So you'll see me interviewing men from time to time. Today, I wanted to be sure that I told you about a personal announcement, which I don't do often, but I did want you to know that in the past week, I have been a busy girl. I got the Patrick Flint box set out in ebook and paperback and audio format, and that has the first three books in the Patrick Flint series, Switchback, Snake Oil, and Sawbones. And I got the paperback edition out of number four in the Patrick Flint series, Scapegoat. So you can get out there and pre-order the ebook. The audio will come October 15th, the ebook October 1st, but you can get the paperback now. Enough about me. I am obligated always to tell you that Wine Women in Writing is a fully owned, solely owned, and copyrighted production of Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, which is an awesome group of authors produced by the wonderful Pam Stack. Thank you, Pam Stack. You are a blessing. So today, instead of talking about me or Pam Stack, we're going to talk with Amber Royer. Amber is the author of Fake Chocolate in the Chocoverse series. Did I say that right? Chocoverse? Okay, well, good. I'm off to a good start then. And so we're going to talk to her about her writing, about her craft in writing, her writing instructions, her craft in chocolate. And I've also seen on her Instagram, coffee, lots and lots of fancy coffee. So welcome to the show, Amber. Of course. And look at mine. Mine is awful. It's an old, Gatorade squeezy bottle. Oh, so for those of you that are listening to us solely via audio, you just miss seeing her cute mug and my hideous, hideous old bicycling water bottle. Amber, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
I am excited because I don't write anything like what you write. And so for me, reading your really well done book was a very big departure and a lot of fun. So tell everybody about the genre you write and about the Chocoverse series.
Okay, so what I write is comic space opera. And you have a universe where everything basically centers around chocolate. Chocolate is the only unique commodity that Earth has left. And everybody wants it. So it starts with the first book is Free Chocolate. And this one, my character decides that to prevent war, she's going to share chocolate with the aliens and, you know, restore balance to the universe because now there won't be this one commodity that everybody's after. It develops in pure chocolate, where you get to visit some of the alien planets that are involved and develop an attachment to this interesting hive mind intelligence, which is followed up at the end of the trilogy, Fake Chocolate, where everything finally does regain a little bit of order. So there's a big influence of food in the books. A lot of people tell me that my books do make them hungry.
They do.
But it's also what I like to call a kitchen sink book. So it's everything and the kitchen sink of things that I like. So you've got that whole space opera thing. There's a lot of influence and indeed some references to things like Star Trek and Hunger Games, you know, all of those fun books that I like. There's also this heavy influence of the telenovela trend, format. So you've got this whole arc that a traditional telenovela heroine takes, where she uses love and heart and, you know, her words to solve the problem and to bring balance back to her world. And my character does that, but on a galactic scale. So I'm merging all of those things in where I'm taking tropes from the novellas and taking, okay, well, if you had, the hidden baby or whatever, what would that be in a galactic space opera context? I had a lot of fun with it because it's like all of these different things I like, and I smashed them all together to make something that made me happy. And I have a small but loyal fan base, and it makes them happy too.
But I love your tagline about space opera meets soap opera, the telenovela aspect. And I thought that was a lot of fun too. I mean, I think the two things that jumped out at me immediately about this book were that it was so tongue-in-cheek, that it was so chippy. You know, you have a lot of confidence in your writing, and it shows to just go out and do what it is that made you happy. And so the whole chocolate thing, and basically, you know, taking over the universe practically by getting people outside Earth hooked on chocolate is hilarious. I mean, it's really funny. It's very different than your normal, you know, Star Trek, you know, going out there with the Borg will assimilate you. Instead, it's the chocolatiers will assimilate you. And in the telenovela aspect, that the high drama was, to me, just hilarious. I loved those aspects of it so much. So your kitchen sink worked. Go. But what made you, because these are your first published novels, right? You've got a cooking book, right?
Yeah.
Yes, so, she does.
I'm going to hold the whole stack up together because they look so pretty.
Oh, be sorry if you're only podcasting here now. Free chocolate, pure chocolate, fake chocolate, story like a journalist, and there's herbs in my chocolate. There seems to be a theme with this chocolate thing with you. So I don't want to say obsession, because that would be strong. But it seems that chocolate plays an influence in your entire, I want to say life, not just writing life. So tell us about your chocolate thing.
Okay. So it kind of started as an accident. I had been doing some things with my husband for the local herb society, where we had done a canning book that was about canning with herbs, which is out of print. It was one of those things that we did for an event. And we tossed it up on Amazon. The cover's still there. It's awful. Oh, so awful. And so the next summer, we were going to do another thing for the Big Herb Festival. And they were like, well, what are you going to do that's going to top what you did last year about canning with herbs? And so we kind of thought about it. And I came up with this idea of there's herbs in my chocolate. And so we published it as a little pamphlet, and we did the presentation at the Herb Festival, where I had three different kinds of hot chocolate and people could taste the unsweetened Aztec style chocolate. And then we did one of those really rich, like in the movie Chocolat, they have the drinking chocolate that looks like it's about to become solid as it pours. And then we did a thyme and orange chocolate. So one was spiced, one was lavender and rose. And you know, the lavender and rose went first, and we had a jar of honey. And we put it with the unsweetened chocolate, and the honey was gone, but almost all of the chocolate wasn't.
Really?
And it was kind of interesting looking at what people's taste buds associate with chocolate and what it really is. And about the same time, I got hooked up with DallasChocolate.org, and we attended our first chocolate festival. And I got to see a bean to bar chocolate making demonstration and meet some of these artisan chocolate makers. And this all happened a little bit before NaNoWriMo happened that year. So HerbFest in the summer, then September was the chocolate fest. And then it was October or November, we went on this cruise, and I was lecturing about herbs, gardening, and tea. And I had talked to one of the artisan chocolate makers, and he had donated some chocolate, and it's Amano chocolate, if anybody cares, it's amazing. he had donated some craft chocolate for me to do a chocolate tasting as one of my presentations aboard the cruise ship. And we sailed out of Baltimore, which is not far from Hershey, Pennsylvania. And it was interesting, the definite divide between the people who were like, ooh, this dark chocolate is amazing. I've never had anything like it in my life. It's like wine. And there's all of these notes to it. And then the other half that got into my backup chocolate, which I brought in case I didn't have enough, and the Reese's cups disappeared, and some of the craft chocolate was still there. And while we were on this trip, we wound up taking a tour of a cacao plantation in Samana, Dominican Republic. And so we got to meet some of the people who grow chocolate. And one of the things we found out is very few of the cacao farmers ever get to even taste their finished bars.
Wow.
And so I had all this stuff rattling around in my head, and then NaNoWriMo happened and I didn't have an idea. And so all of that just kind of came together and gelled. And the first draft of the whole thing was just this like, you know, like noises off. There was a cacao pod and everybody was using it like a football and they were running around on the ship, and very little of that survived. But there was something about the idea that just caught my beta reader's attention. And so I kept working at it and I kept refining it. And eventually it turned into Free Chocolate. And by that point, I had gotten to do some other things with DallasChocolate.org. I've met a number of actual chocolate makers. And so people sometimes ask me, do you ever get tired of eating chocolate? And I'm like, yes. But if I go to a different city, back before COVID, when you could do that.
Yeah.
like we went to California and it wasn't even for a book reason. We were there for other reasons. And there are all these little craft chocolate shops. And since I Instagram about chocolate and coffee, we went to all the little shops. And people talk about their passion, about why they are making chocolate from scratch, or why they're making bonbons instead of using industrial chocolate. They're using chocolate from somebody, you know, that they know, all of those things. And so you can wind up getting offered too many samples, but it's the passion behind it. It's the art to it. I actually know two people who do chocolate, who like to do like chocolate sculptures and stuff, who don't actually like to eat chocolate.
That's just
they just see it as an art medium.
Yeah. Well, it has certainly transcended into a different form of art with you, you know, with the writing. Mm-hmm. But it just is. To me, it was fascinating when you and I first connected to see all these connections between food and chocolate and your writing. And that's even before we talk about the other side of your writing life, which is teaching and mentoring. So I would love to hear about that, because that's one of my passions too.
Yeah. So I started that out of teaching about cooking. I was working for the University of Texas at Arlington, and I was teaching continuing education stuff, kids camps. And so we did like a cupcake camp. We did some basic cooking instruction for, you know, people who are just starting college and living on their own for the first time. And I had been writing since, I decided I wanted to be a writer in the fourth grade. And I went to school, English major, then, you know, got the whole library thing. And I was teaching kiddos because I wanted to have more time to devote to my writing and some of my other interests. So I started working part time. And here I am, I'm teaching cooking camp. And here comes my boss. And she's like, our writing instructor bailed at the last minute. And this was like 12 or 14 years ago. And she's like, do you know anybody who could teach a writing class next week? And I'm like, and so I started teaching that way, even before I had a published book, because I had the librarian background and I had been doing creative writing so long, I understood the theory of it. And so I've been teaching for quite a while, and I decided to pull all of the common things that people had into a book. And I'm also kind of the queen of worksheets. So I would bring worksheets to all of my classes. It's like, okay, well, we're gonna discuss character agency. Well, here's some character interviews. We're going to discuss, plot questions. So here's a beat sheet and a plot circle. And oh, here's a W curve if you need one. So I had collected over 60 worksheets that I had just presented for my classes. And I was talking with a local writer through writers organizations around Dallas, who is also a publicist. And she's like, you need a book, so that people will actually see your worksheets. Because if you have them up on your website, nobody's ever going to find that. But if there's a book on Amazon. So that book turned into Story Like a Journalist, which if you look at it, this much of it is instruction. This much is worksheets. So
that's awesome.
Worksheets on every possible topic to get you through it. And the thing that's always appealed to me is writing is writing is writing. So if you are writing a memoir, you're basically writing a novel about yourself. If you're writing a news article, you're focusing on those same elements of hook and all of that. So when you write a memoir or a news article, people look at it a lot more logically than they do a novel.
Yeah.
And so my book takes it as though you're writing a news article about your fictional world. And so it focuses on who is your character, what is your premise, when and where is your setting, how is your plot, and theme is why.
Very cool.
Very cool.
And so it boils it down to logical steps that you can take, because it's weird the questions you get in a writing class. I got a question more on how do I take all of these things that I've built that are pieces of my book and actually make it into a book? And I'm like, you just put it in order and it becomes a book. But actually they wanted a more scientific, mathematical kind of way to figure out what goes where and what they actually needed. And a lot of the research that I did trying to figure out a way to answer that question for new writers in a way that they could understand it helped me to plot better.
When you think about a new writer, when you compare a novel to a journalist's article, a novel becomes less intimidating because everybody has read 250 to 500 word pieces, you know, on a blog or in a newspaper, in a magazine. And so, you know, they aren't as intimidated by that. And I love what you did there. Not only does it give them a method, but it does it in a way that suggests that it's more common than they think to be successful at this, that it's accessible to them. So that, I don't know if that was part of your intent, but that really jumps out at me that it makes it less intimidating.
Yeah, because if you have an understanding of what goes into it and you already have that, that's the concept of a story Bible. And I started out when I was a young writer as a complete pantser. And, you know, my published books are by no means my first books because I was a pantser and I had always been taught that writing is this whole genius thing inside you. And, you know, that basic, if you feel it, the technique will come. And honestly, it doesn't if you don't understand what you're trying to build. So I was basically trying to polish talent by writing another manuscript because everyone always says, don't get stuck on the one manuscript, write something else. They mean after you have edited it to the best of your ability, but I kind of missed that part as a young person who had been told that I was, you know, oh, so talented. But what they never mentioned was oh so talented for a teenager.
That's a hard thing now with the instancy of online publication. I hear from a lot of teenagers, and I think that, you know, I'm a mom of five, and I'll be the first to say I want my kids to have good, healthy self-esteem. But when we overpraise and don't put it in context, we create unrealistic expectations. And so I've dealt with a lot of parents where I say, listen, your kid does write good for a teenager, but there needs to be additional learning experience in life, emotional depth, you know, et cetera, that they gain before they really want to marry their name to something that's out there on the internet and forever, because it could come back to bite them later and ruin them for people that are burned on that name. Like, oh, I read that and it was flat and two-dimensional. And that's not a knock against kids. That's that none of us is born perfect. None of us is. Mm-hmm. I always say, you know, write your first 1,000,000 words. And when you write your first 1,000,000 words, you'll get there. But if your first 100,000 are great, well, just think how good they're going to be when you get to the end of the million. And I think that's what I'm hearing and what you're saying too, is that you can be good, but you've got to learn too. And you got to live.
Yeah. I teach in the summer, I teach workshops through Writing Workshops Dallas for teenagers. Mm-hmm. And there are some super talented kiddos. They're kiddos who have potential. A lot of what teens need to learn is focus.
Yep.
Because there are some of them that have been in my classes for several years. And it's like every time I see them, they're on a different project. Mm-hmm. And I keep asking, so did you finish the last one? And they're like, no, it got boring. One of them, I changed music styles and therefore wasn't inspired to write this anymore. or it's not as good on the page as I thought it was when it was in my head. And to me,
it's like first drafts never are.
First draft of first book.
Yeah, and so exactly.
Some of them, they're on their fourth or fifth project, but they've never finished one. And it's like 2,000 words in is this magic number, because I'll ask people, and adults classes too. It's like, well, how many words did you have? Oh, about 2,000, about 2,500. And then I realized this wasn't going to work. And I'm like, okay, you got to the part where the shiny wore off.
Yeah.
And you got through most of the setup, and now you have to develop a novel. Yeah. And if you keep doing that, you're gonna destroy your confidence more and more every time you don't finish one.
It's true. And for me, another aspect of the teenage writer is that, well, and again, I'll compare it to being a mom of a teenager, going to counselors with teenagers, and discussing with counselors how the difference in brain maturity as you are going past your teenage years into adulthood, that you start to look at the world post 18 from the way your brain develops, with a focus on other more than self. Whereas before then, you are not even wired to think about others. You really aren't. And if you do, you're exceptional and you're different. And books suffer from that, right? So if you have someone that cannot see past the protagonist, or that hasn't understood the depth of relationships, then it's not going to be a book, the same book they would write 4 years from then. And that to me is a challenge, because how do you say to a kid, you just need to live a little bit longer as well as learn, because this book is going to become something fabulous. Don't be in a hurry, because the written word published is forever.
Yeah. Well, part of it is just letting them get to the point where they finished a project.
Yeah.
And, you know, get critique. Don't be afraid to put yourself on the same level ground as an adult writer to get critiqued.
Exactly.
Because if people give you that softball of, oh, you're talented, no, this is great, you're not going to realize it's not ready.
Until you have people that tell you it sucks, you're not getting the right feedback. And not in that many words necessarily, but somebody's got to tell you what's wrong with it, or you can't improve it, instead of just you're shiny and beautiful like your words are. And those two things may be true, but you won't get better that way.
Yeah.
That's tough.
And honestly, I'm glad that my first book never saw the light of day. It was kind of awful. And then my next few, I have this, and you probably noticed it, I have this amount of energy in the voice in my writing. Mm-hmm. And that has always been the appeal. And so I would write, and I wrote YA for a while because everyone was telling me my voice had to be YA, which, you know, it still has some people confused that I write with energy in first person present tense for something that is not YA. So they assume my books are intended for teens when they read the first couple of pages, which they can't be read by teens. They're perfectly accessible to teens, but the characters are much older, and it's the will thee or won't he propose is definitely not a YA type of book. But it's that whole energy that would get me requests from agents and editors off of the first 3 pages or the first 10 pages. And then they would get into it and realize that I had no idea how to plot. Because I had never studied structure, I was trying to get by on talent alone. And when you try to do that, it's like, oh, shiny, oh, squirrel. Yeah. And you have all of these loop-de-doos in your plot that, you know, maybe each scene by itself is funny, but it doesn't add up to anything. And art has to add up to something.
It does, especially when you're asking someone to make the commitment of a 70,000 word to 150,000 word novel. It's a serious commitment, and you've got to give them a story payoff, a story arc, and a plot. And it is interesting. And I think a lot of early writers, like you're saying, they don't know how to plot. And my first few were crap too, and they died horrible deaths. And when I look back on them, I think, oh, pretty words, but where's the meat? So now plot to me is everything. I storyboard, I plot, then I go back and chart it out and see if I did what I thought I did. And I bring in my story partner. Are we tight enough? Are we leaning forward? You know,
yeah.
But you don't know that when you start. There's lots to learn. So good for you for teaching the kids and older people too.
I did a presentation for a local writers group, and I had done the same presentation for Amazing Con. Amazing Stories Magazine did a little online conference, and I did plotting an amazing story in 3 days. So I'm doing this presentation for beginning writers for the local writers group. I'm talking about how you have, it was for a short story. So I'm like, you have a certain amount of words. You have to write lean. You have to look at each scene and make sure it's doing something character wise and plot wise. Mm-hmm. And I had two of them ask me, it's like, are you sure I have to cut scenes if they're not doing those things? And I'm like,
yes,
even yes. if they're pretty, there's a character from the Chocoverse series that wound up entirely on the cutting room floor. Because, you know, there's so much going on in the books with Bo has a publicist and there's all this media campaign surrounding Saving Earth and she's the face of it and all of this. There was a character that I had who was a Canadian teenager who's addicted to those Nanaimo bars, the cookie bars. And he's afraid to eat them after he finds out the chocolate is addictive. But he's an artist, and so the publicist hires him in some of the early drafts. He actually winds up on the ship with them in the second book and has to get sent home in this escape pod and all kinds of stuff. He was a fun character because he was a total fanboy, and he was in love with Bo, and she's, you know, much older and already has a boyfriend, and it isn't going to happen, but he's just like, I will die for you. I will do anything for you, and he was hilarious. But he didn't do anything for the story.
Yeah.
And so I'm looking at the story and how long it's getting. I wound up cutting every scene that he was in.
Good for you. And in the interest of when things go long, this is supposed to be a 20-minute show. I just looked up. We've been chatting so much about craft, which is fun, and also about not just craft, but story structure and plotting and how that fits into craft, that it's 27 minutes. So here we go, folks. I've got to do the wrap up. You're going to have to say goodbye to Amber in a second, but I want to remind you that you can get my books out on my website, but you can also go and find the next show that I'm going to do and pull the book for that author, read it ahead of time, and then these shows are even more fun for you. And while you're out there, you can get my books on Kindle Unlimited or paperback or audio or regular ebook, however you want to do it, and be sure you check out the new box set of the Patrick Flint books and the new paperback of Scapegoat. That is all of the awesome content we've got for you today. I want to thank my special guest, Amber Royer. Amber, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. And you guys go check out Fake Chocolate, which you can start the Chocoverse series by instead going to Free Chocolate. So you got to work your way to Fake Chocolate. Bye, everyone.